Kofi Kingston flips the bird. Kevin Owens turns babyface with a single move. And Drake Maverick is finally going on his honeymoon? Or is he? Your SmackDown Live review right now.
Welcome to the WWE Podcast. Your place for the most passionate wrestling analysis on the web.
Just turn Roman heel. What is WWE waiting for?
When other wrestling podcasts put you to sleep, you can count on the WWE Podcast to keep you engaged and asking for more.
I've been watching wrestling for over 20 years, and that was one of the best matches I've ever seen.
This is unlike any other wrestling analysis. So without any further delay, let's get the show started right now.
Welcome to the WWE Podcast for this SmackDown Live review, the show that aired yesterday, July 2nd. Today, obviously, is July 3rd, 2019, and we're going to get to the SmackDown Live review, which I thought was a solid show. I don't think it was as good as Raw, but there were definitely some highlights of the show, and we're going to get to those in just a second. But before I do, as always, I want to welcome all of you to the show and just simply say that if you haven't checked out the website, please do so at WWEpodcast.com. I just published another article today all about Evolve, actually, and a little bit off topic, but that's why I have my awesome writing team, and I really wouldn't be able to make the website what it is without them. And so thank you so much for your contributions, and give them a little bit of love and check out the article and the opinion section of my site, which is also featured on the main page as well. So just check that out when you get a moment, and let's just get right into it, right? SmackDown Live. Again, as I just said, I think that it wasn't as good as Monday Night Raw. It still feels like the leftovers of Raw just kind of warmed over for Tuesday night. There's never really a lot of progression in general. The big stars tend to stay away. When I say big stars, like Undertaker, he seems to be lately a Raw-only guy, although for most of his career made his name on SmackDown when he was the American Badass, and even when he became the Deadman again. So his home still feels like SmackDown. And yet they continue to feature him on Raw, which just continues to drive the point home that Raw is viewed as the A flagship show for WWE. But overall, there was some progression in storyline. So I'm not just painting the whole show with a broad brush that nothing ever happens and everything just treads water. There was some progression on this show, and I'm going to start off with what we last saw on SmackDown, the lasting images of SmackDown Live, and that was Kevin Owens delivering the stunner, not the Stone Cold stunner, apparently there's a difference, it's just the stunner to Dolph Ziggler in an attempt to, and I think, a clear message that Kevin Owens is babyface. So let me get this straight, if I'm just keeping track and keeping score at home. He went from left as a heel, apparently, even though he's getting bullied by Braun Strowman, so he had kind of the sympathy as a heel, but let's just label him as a heel because that's how he was cast. He was a heel when he left. Took some time off, went bowling, softball games with his kids, whatever he did. And the fans were like, hey, we miss Kevin. Comes back as a babyface. And then does a couple of Kevin Owens shows and becomes an honorary member of the New Day, as Big E was nursing his injury. About 3 weeks later, he turns heel again and then goes on to team kind of with Sami Zayn with no explanation, and then goes back to being a babyface with this turn again with Dolph Ziggler. Now, I'm for a Kevin Owens babyface run. He's funny, legitimately a funny guy. He's got the respect of fans. We've had a chance to boo him. While I think he's a good heel, I'm interested to see how his babyface run goes. It is long overdue. We've seen the heel Kevin Owens for 99% of his WWE career. We know what he's capable of in terms of being a heel, and I really am curious to see what happens with him as they move forward. And the stunner is certainly going to help him, in reaching that goal. It's one of the most beloved finishers of all time, obviously used by the greatest of all time, in my opinion, in Stone Cold Steve Austin. So I think that some may view it, oh, it's a knockoff, get your own finish. But the Stunner is so beloved. It's so beloved. And he does it pretty decently. So, turns heel. I could do without the fat jokes for Kevin, okay? I really could. Randy Orton, I remember, made a couple comments, and, you know, and probably others throughout the months and years since Kevin Owens has been on the roster about, oh, he doesn't look like a wrestler. He just looks like kind of an overweight guy sitting at home, and, you know, whatever. I know Randy Orton made comments about that, and obviously this past week on SmackDown we got the hot dog contest eating joke from Ziggler. That let's be clear here. This is WWE management and Vince McMahon trying to poke fun at his appearance. Vince McMahon, in his mind, in his infinite wisdom, just has this image of what a wrestler and the face of a company and a successful wrestler should and could be. That is a 6'5", 260-pound, ripped, jacked dude. Kevin Owens is neither of those things. He's a scruffy-looking guy that has a belly on him. He does. He doesn't look the part. And you know that that still eats away at Vince McMahon at his age of 70. Still has that image of what a WWE star should be. And through the promos, you know Vince McMahon is the one really behind those words. Anytime anybody pokes fun at his gut or his weight, it's Vince McMahon behind it. And I don't like it. Look at the successful guys throughout the years that have not had six packs and have had damn big bellies. Think about this. I mean, Umaga, for some reason, comes to mind. He wasn't in particularly great shape, the traditional great shape. Yokozuna, Big Show, Rikishi, Vader. I mean, I could go on. Very, very successful Hall of Fame guys. And yet, Kevin Owens is just, for whatever reason, looked at as the guy that WWE management can use to poke fun at. And it's not that I'm a snowflake and I'm super sensitive to the weight. No. It just doesn't do him any favors when you have the heels or baby faces, anybody, no matter what role you're in, point out his weight. Since when has that mattered and been a qualification to be a success in WWE? Look at Bobby Lashley. This guy looks like he was carved from stone. Look at EC3. Looks like he was carved from stone. And where has either man gone? The answer is nowhere. Nowhere. And outside of Bobby Lashley in this past week on Monday Night Raw, which I mentioned last night in my show, has been the most relevant that he has ever been in WWE up to that point. The point I'm making is that Vince McMahon just will not change his mind on what a wrestler should look like. Oh, you're representing the company. Well, this is you know, a different day, a different age, a different era. Okay, so anyway, I'm going a little off topic, so I don't like that. But Kevin Owens going babyface, I hope they stick with this, because if they continue to flip and flop back and forth, fans aren't going to start to care. I mean, already fans are kind of going, wait, he was a babyface, turned on us, and now he's a babyface again. So I guess that means him and Sami Zayn, their little short-lived, unexplained reunion is just that, short-lived and unexplained, and will remain so as Sami Zayn just goes MIA this week, and we don't know where he's at. I don't know. But I miss Sami Zayn. I miss Sami Zayn winning matches. I miss Kevin Owens winning matches. I need Kevin Owens, if they're going to go full babyface with Kevin Owens, to make him believable, make him strong, get him on a hot streak. Get the fans behind him. Give the fans a reason to get behind him. Him losing and having one victory since his return is downright shameful. Shameful since his return. So I don't want to hear that wins and losses don't matter, because when you just never win, it matters. And even in wrestling, in this fantasy environment, it matters. So I'm for this Kevin Owens run. I need it to be committed to, and I'm fine with the stunner. I'm totally fine with the stunner. Maybe I'm a little biased because Stone Cold is my favorite of all time. As I sit here with a Austin 316 t-shirt on. That's serious. I really am. So the vintage one, too. Not any kind of variation or weird thing. Just the original Austin 316 t-shirt. I recently also got a D-Generation X with the, it's that gray logo they had t-shirt, the one on the back that all said two words and S asterisk CK it. So I kind of feel cool now that I'm 34 years old that I can, you know, purchase this without my parents' permission. Right. When this t-shirt was actually in style and in real time popular, I was 13 years old. And, I couldn't do it. I mean, I was in middle school to early high school, and you can't wear those shirts in school. I mean, it's just too suggestive. Your parents on top of it are just like, what is this? I remember getting a shirt that I believe it was directed at or from the King, Jerry the King Lawler, when he, called breasts puppies. And I remember the shirt said in red letters, red bubble letters, "Show me your puppies." I love that. I mean, it's just such an immature sign of the times, right? And I thought it was the coolest thing ever at 15 or 16, and Jerry Lawler going bonkers over any time he saw cleavage from any of the female performers and called them puppies and all that kind of stuff. And so, it's just so funny to think back. Like, I thought that was cool. Imagine that. Imagine just wearing that out now. Now, the retro shirts are cool because they're so retro. And everybody remembers the fond times. It's funny when you bring back things that were cool that faded away, and then they suddenly become cool again. And what's old is new again, I guess, is the old adage, right? So you wear like a authentic, original, Jurassic Park t-shirt. People are like, oh, that's pretty cool. Jurassic Park was made 26 years ago, and now it's suddenly cool again. Just retro stuff. People love retro, especially 90s kids, and I'm one of them. So I guess that's where I'm at now. I'm sitting here with an Austin 316 t-shirt. I don't live in my mom's basement, so there's that too. But moving on. So another big ticket item from SmackDown Live. That I alluded to at the very quick open was Kofi Kingston and Samoa Joe's interaction. And WWE, for the first time that I can remember in the longest time, implemented the bird. Kofi Kingston flips off Samoa Joe. Now, it was not shown on the Hulu version of SmackDown Live, which is how I watch all of my WWE weekly programming, and then fill in the blanks with the things that aren't included, and when I read what happened on Raw. So, from what I saw, when Kofi Kingston flipped off Samoa Joe, they used Samoa Joe's body as a camera angle to block Kofi's finger. So I don't know if that actually came across on TV. I know there's pictures out there, and I've seen them, of Kofi Kingston flipping off Samoa Joe. So clearly, somehow, some way, the camera did get there, and maybe in the post-edit, the production team decided to edit out that part and make it so that only Samoa Joe's body was seen when Kofi Kingston flipped off Samoa Joe. So first of all, fine. I'm fine with it. I didn't expect it at this day and age. They tend to push the PG product at times. And I'm fine with that, too. I'm still a TV-14 guy, and not because of the sex, and not just because, blood and senseless chair shots to the head. No, because I think it allowed for more creativity to flow, and edgier, and believable language from from competitors who are legitimately angry instead of just saying, I'm going to whoop your butt, mister, which at times it feels like they've kind of alluded to, and they would just speak like a normal, angry fighter, competitor, combat athlete, how they would naturally react. And again, the PG product just kind of neuters a lot of that. Like I said, it's I'm going to get you next time, mister. That's how I feel sometimes. I know it's being a little dramatic, but at times it's like, oh, shucks. And I do not like a kid's version of professional wrestling. So it's nice to see a little bit of a throwback to that. And so I'm fine with it. Kofi flipping off Samoa Joe instead of shaking his hand, which I don't know why Samoa Joe would agree to not attack any of him, his family members, his friends, if he just shook his hand. Maybe he was just trying to lure him in and attack him that way and pull him in. I don't know, but I just don't know what was in it for Samoa Joe, other than just trying to get Kofi to do something that really wouldn't have benefited Joe, other than to say, oh, see, I got you. I mean, I don't know. But it ended up in a quick interaction with Kofi hitting Trouble in Paradise, leaving Joe laying. And Joe, without repeating myself week after week after week, has such a believable tone. You cannot argue Joe's tone, his cadence, the way he delivers is in such a fashion that makes you pay attention. It makes you look at him and go, I believe him. He may be a nasty human being that I won't cheer for, but damn, I believe him. And that is a rare, rare feat this day and age, with all the scripted promos that everybody has jumped from, you know, pillar to post and killed and, you know, buried 6 feet deep, resurrected and killed it again, myself included. For all of that, you'd never know that Joe's promos are contrived and scripted, because if they are, he does a damn good job of making you believe and feel that they are not, and that they are from his brain. I am of the belief that Samoa Joe deserves a 1 year title run. 1 year as WWE champion. I need it. It needs to happen. I don't think it will happen. WWE, again, is, I think, in a good position from a PR perspective and from the fans' perspective, who are not ready just yet to give up on Kofi being champion and where it's time for them to move on. I just don't think we're there yet. It's only been a few months since WrestleMania. They're still celebrating somewhat with Kofi, and I just don't think it's time. I should say that. I don't think WWE thinks it's time. I'm already. I'm like, let's pack up the car and go. I mean, I've already got 1 foot on the gas pedal. I'm driving. Let's go. That's where I'm at with Samoa Joe as champion. If they don't give him a run, they are seriously missing out on the boat here. So, but the interaction on SmackDown was very interesting, though. I mean, Kofi got a one-up, and that was nice to see, too. So, the feud is heating up nicely. I like it already better than Ziggler and Kofi. So, all right. The other thing on SmackDown Live, a little bit of a, I guess, comedy break in the show, is Drake Maverick, who is finally getting to go on his honeymoon, captures the WWE 24/7 championship just as his wife is at the door and they are ready to go on their honeymoon. So I'm sure, I'm 100% sure that you will not see R-Truth in some form or fashion make an appearance at Hornswoggle's honeymoon. It's just not going to happen. I'm sure WWE cameras won't follow Drake Maverick there, and I'm sure R-Truth will have he will not show his face at all. So, of course, I'm being very facetious. But I think it could be very interesting. I mean, they're clearly just setting this up, right, for R-Truth to make his way, sneak on the plane, get off, maybe get him in a hotel room or get him on the beach or by the pool, something, maybe at a beach bar or a pool bar or I don't know, but maybe on a sailboat somewhere. Who knows? You could go a million directions. And so I understand why they're doing it, and I'm sure R-Truth will find his way to Drake Maverick on his honeymoon. But again, what are the same six guys? Do they also shower that way too? I mean, do they all just follow each other in single file and just look like Looney Tunes doing it? Why do they always have to be in single file? I understand the perception you're trying to give off is that, oh, there's guys chasing him all over the place for the championship. Why would you chase in a straight line for the championship? Wouldn't the guy at the front of the line have the advantage? So I'm not following why we have to watch the same six guys follow each other in a straight line after R-Truth week after week. It's just not for me. As bizarre and crazy as this whole WWE 24/7 championship is, that's just something that is just way too cartoonish. There's a difference between comedy and entertainment and just cartoonish Looney Tunes garbage. And I don't like the single file thing. It's think about it. I mean, you guys think I'm just nitpicking, but it's ridiculous that the same six guys are just following each other in a straight line. So, all right, let's move on. All right, Daniel Bryan and Big E, one-on-one. And this one ended with Daniel Bryan getting the clean victory, somewhat, over Big E. And it was with the running knee. So I've alluded to that I love the Planet's Champions. I love that they are the tag team champions. They are a good fit. They are the most legitimate tag team in my eyes right now. And they belong as champion. My concern is that they're not getting enough mic time, particularly Daniel Bryan, who's just a wizard on the mic. And they're not giving him enough time. I mean, we saw him turn into this ultra-vegan, condescending, holier-than-thou vegan that is here to just talk garbage about all of us that aren't vegan and we're wasteful and, you know, we eat all this garbage food and we're destroying the planet. And then he becomes tag team champions with Rowan, and then he kind of, week after week, gets less and less and less and less mic time. I needed more of a mission statement from him. Remind us who and what he is and where what he's going after. I need just kind of a rejuvenation of Daniel Bryan and Rowan, who are now champions, but yet sort of fading in the background. Getting a win over Big E is a step in the right direction. I'm just concerned that they're just starting to fade into the darkness a little bit, and they're going to drop the belts. And what is now a triple threat match at Extreme Rules. With Heavy Machinery, and we have obviously Daniel Bryan and Rowan and the New Day for the tag team belts. And so, you know, the triple threat rears its head again, and I guess I'm fine with it because these are clearly the three best tag teams on Raw, or on SmackDown Live, rather, and they're going to put them in there. I'm fearful that, again, they could drop the belts here. I don't think it's time. Give them a stupid long run. Can you tell I like long title runs? I love long title reigns. Even if I don't believe that that person should have the belt, it's worth the sacrifice of the legitimacy of preserving the legitimacy of that belt to keep the champion the same as long as humanly possible instead of just going for shock value where, the fans are getting bored. But is it the right time? Give us the right time, right person, right place. And let's make the change. I don't like shock value champions. They're great in the moment, and you go, oh my God, I was here for that. I remember that. And then what? Right? So, look at Dolph Ziggler. Cashed in 2011 against Alberto Del Rio, became champion, and then that's it. Although somebody did correct me. Thank you so much. On the Apple Podcast review of Dolph Ziggler was world champion twice. So, we got the Twitter police out there. We got the Apple Podcast police out there. So thank you so much. And thanks so much for your 3-star rating. It was much appreciated as well. So I wish I could respond to those reviews. Man, if you get a chance, and I'm not going to give publicity to all the to some of the negative reviews, but there's some doozies on there. Just check out Apple Podcasts and click all reviews. Some are really great, and I appreciate those. But man, some of them are brutal. And I just wish I could get them on the show and talk to these clowns. But anyway, moving on. So the tag team division is a bit weak right now, and Heavy Machinery is clearly getting the rub and spotlight that they deserve. I don't believe that they will win at Extreme Rules. The only possibility is New Day, but New Day don't need the belts. They don't need them as much as Rowan and Brian need the belts. So I don't see any reason to take the belts off of them. So maybe an early prediction spoiler there. Prediction coming next week, by the way, obviously. And while I'm at it, I don't know why I didn't mention this at the top of the show, but the show for tomorrow is more than likely going to be scheduled for Friday. So a bit of a break from the traditional Thursday, but again, it's 4th of July, everyone's away, and you still get me 4 days a week. It's just going to be a day later for the final show of the week tomorrow, being delayed till Friday. But I promise you it'll be worth it. Plus, it gives us an extra day to absorb and discuss any news that comes out of the WWE newswire. So there's that too. So just keep an eye out for, and your ears out really, for the new audio coming Friday. Okay, moving on with other SmackDown Live items was Alexa Bliss allowing Nikki Cross to hold, or host rather, the Moment of Bliss segment with Bayley. And overall, I thought it was fine with that part of it. I think Nikki holds your attention. I don't know if it's because of her heavy accent or she's just unique looking or her smile is so wacky and crazy. I don't know what it is, but she holds my attention. And that's a compliment to her. She holds my attention in a good way, not in a, oh my God, she, you know, she's cute or what. No. She holds my attention in a way that's like, what is she going to do next? What's she going to say next? I feel like there's more to her. I want to learn more about her. I want to learn her motives. Why is she, you know, befriending Alexa Bliss? She just makes me want to get to know her character more. Of course, we all knew her in NXT. We knew that former version of her with Insanity. And now she's transitioned to this giddy schoolgirl that is just looking up to the popular girl. The head cheerleader and the nerd are teaming up because the nerd wants to get the rub off the popular girl at school, and the popular girl at school is like cheating off the tests of the nerdy girl of Nikki Cross to, you know, pass her classes. That seems like the relationship ultimately is going to end in a disaster. We all know that. But I think her and Bayley interacted pretty decently. I wasn't a fan of Bayley winning here, because here's another example of 50-50 booking. I'm not a fan of it because 50-50 booking is the kiss of death for any character ever. And yes, it's only been a couple of weeks, but Nikki beat Bayley last week, and now Bayley beats Nikki this week, and it was clean. And I understand why they're doing it, to get Bayley a little bit of momentum rolling into her championship match, and, you know, getting Alexa angry at Nikki for losing her match, creating a more of a tense relationship between the two. So, I mean, I understand it, but I wasn't particularly fond so much of the outcome of it. But again, I understand why they did it. So Nikki Cross continues to just fall for the nonsense that is Alexa Bliss, and obviously her using Nikki Cross to get a championship opportunity and to try to win the championship ultimately, right? But we all know the end game is Nikki and her breaking up. It's just who plays the face, who plays the heel. You could make a case that Alexa Bliss could play the face here. There's a way you could do it. There's a way you could do it. And Bayley is champion. Kind of going back to that. It was interesting to see her win the Money in the Bank and then cash in the same night. And all of a sudden she's champion. She goes from being irrelevant. And you hear on the internet, her and Sasha were just making a scene backstage and being immature about losing the women's tag team belts. And the next thing you know, Bayley's champion. You're like, what in the hell is going on here? So there was that. And you know, since that time, I think the shock value has worn off and fans are like, okay, Bayley, you're SmackDown Women's Champion. You said you're done with the hugs, yet you still come out with your, you know, ridiculously cartoonish Bayley buddies. Where's the little bit of an edge that you were talking about? Her and Alexa had a great exchange. It was the last week of the week before in a Moment of Bliss. Things got real. It was one of the best promos of SmackDown that week, if not one of the best promo of the week a couple of weeks ago. And now she's starting to fade a little bit into, well, give us a little bit more. She's the champion. She's the SmackDown Women's Champion. Give us something more with Bayley beyond the hugs and the sideways ponytail. And, oh, all the girls love her. All the little girls look up to her. I can put my ponytail to the side, too. All that stuff. Put it aside. It's great marketing. It's great, you know, strategy to appeal to that audience and demographic and all. Oh, she's very PG, very family-friendly, safe. I get all that. But if you're telling me that she's done with hugs and that she has a little bit more of an edge, I'm not saying she's going to come out cussing, swearing, drinking beer and wearing, you know, torn-up denim. I'm just talking about, you know, stop smiling so much. Just be a little bit more vicious in the ring. You can do it even with your in-ring style. You don't have to do it necessarily with promos. But I haven't seen any evidence of that. All right, moving on. We had Apollo Crews and Andrade. Andrade, you know, started off strong. Crews fights back, dumps him out to the ringside, and ultimately Andrade wins with the hammerlock DDT. Of course, not without the help of Zelina hitting a cheap shot on Crews behind the ref's back. Zelina Vega is such an asset to Andrade's character. I'm not just talking about helping him gain wins. I'm just talking about to the overall presentation of who he is. She is such a skilled deliverer of her lines. She is very, very believable in what she says, especially for a manager that's a lost art. When she's not out there, Andrade feels naked in a way. He feels like he's missing something big. And him and Zelina are one of the best pairings in WWE for male and female, or pairings in general at all. So Andrade winning here, I don't know what to make of it other than, okay, well, you beat Apollo Crews, who's been defined as nothing more than a lower card act for the last couple of years. So, okay, fine. I mean, Andrade also beat Rey Mysterio, one of the greatest of all time and a Hall of Famer, but this win against Apollo Crews, it's just that. It's just a win. I mean, I don't really know where to go with it. Oh, okay. Ember Moon and Mandy Rose. Sonya Deville was at ringside, and Ember went up to the turnbuckle and followed up with the Eclipse for the three count. I'm just reading my notes here. So Ember Moon wins, gets a little bit of revenge on Mandy Rose, which is fine with me. It's better than Ember Moon sitting backstage reading books, getting paid hundreds of thousands of dollars to read books backstage. So that's good. And Mandy Rose goes back to, I don't know, what, handing out magazines of herself? I don't know. At one point, I thought Mandy Rose was going to be the top of the division. I picked her to win the Money in the Bank briefcase. She almost did. And her and Sonya have, well, more Mandy than Sonya, have kind of, again, faded a little bit. And I don't know if this is a long-term plan with her and Ember. I would guess not. But I hope this is the end of it. Considering that she beat Mandy clean in the ring tells me that this program might be over, or at least ending at Extreme Rules. Let's put it that way. End at Extreme Rules. Okay. And then we, of course, get the main event of Kevin Owens and Dolph Ziggler versus Heavy Machinery. And Heavy Machinery wins this one, and we, as I mentioned earlier in the show, get a Kevin Owens stunning Dolph Ziggler after the match, after a miscommunication that ended up in a super kick to Kevin Owens. Kevin Owens returns in kind and gives Dolph Ziggler a receipt with a stunner that was sold very well. And the crowd, when you see Kevin do the stunner, people don't pop like crazy. Like, it's obviously not a stone cold stunner pop. But people go, yeah, or they go, oh, like you'll hear, oh, in unison. And I think as WWE defines Kevin Owens more as a babyface and solidifies his position more and more and more and more, that you will see the stunner become a thing that people look forward to and don't resent that he's just knocking off Stone Cold Steve Austin. I think that's the key. As popular as the stunner is, arguably more so than the RKO, is the fact that once they firmly go, okay, Kevin, you're a babyface, take the ball, run to the end zone, people will love the stunner because it's, well, the stunner. So, okay, Aleister Black, who's been cutting promos, backstage for it seems like ever and ever about how trying to pick a fight with me. Aleister Black finally gets somebody last week to knock on his door, and we don't know who it is, and I'm fine with that too. I mean, you know what? I didn't even think to reveal that person at Extreme Rules. Obviously, it's going to be a babyface because I believe that he's being cast as a heel. Maybe it is Randy Orton. People have speculated that because Randy Orton's been MIA, and he's one of those stars that, while he's a legacy star, people don't really miss him when he's gone. It's really a strange relationship that he has with the WWE fans. Notice I didn't say universe. The WWE fans, because that's what they are. Fans. All right. I don't know if they... I don't even know what started that universe nonsense. They just needed a corporate buzzword to come up with the entire fan base of WWE. I don't know. Maybe they got it from the Yankees. The Yankees have a Yankees universe t-shirt. I don't know if they just knocked that off and go, ooh, well, that's pretty damn cool. Let's call them the universe. I still can't get behind it. It's just such a corporate buzzword. It just makes me sick. So the WWE fan base, I should say, will, I believe, not get behind Aleister Black. He's been kind of this annoying guy looking for a fight, looking for trouble. And that's typically not a admirable quality in a human being. That would tell me it's a babyface who's going to be facing Aleister Black at Extreme Rules. And outside of Randy Orton, I really don't have any other picks. If you guys have other ideas, let me know. Maybe it is Bray Wyatt. Who knows? Yeah, Bray Wyatt's a possibility. Tweet me at the WWE Podcast. I'm also on Instagram, too, at WWE Podcast, by the way. Yes, I said Instagram, even though it was down all day today. We all survived. Just barely. I mean, I hung on by a thread. Anyway, yeah, I'm also on Instagram. People don't know that, but I am. I'm also on Facebook. Facebook. Yeah, I'm talking about a couple of places I haven't before, right? Instagram and Facebook at the WWE Podcast. You guys know the deal. So just check me out there, and you'll get all the latest posts for this show and for articles that go up as well. So overall, again, I thought it was a solid show, not as shocking and newsworthy as Monday Night Raw was, by a mile, but certainly progress things. And oh, one other segment I didn't talk about was the Shane McMahon and Drew McIntyre interaction with Kevin Owens at the beginning, and obviously Dolph came out, and that's where we got the tag team that was made by Shane McMahon. Instead of putting those two in a match, we got them as a tag team. And at first I was like, wait, why? I want to see these two go at it, but storyline-wise, it made sense. I enjoyed Kevin Owens going off on Ziggler, saying, you know, I don't want to hear it. I deserve it. I deserve it. I deserve it. Stop it. I mean, that's what most fans are thinking, so I applaud that as well. And one other awkward thing that came on SmackDown Live was Shelton Benjamin, who, when asked who he thought would win the Universal Championship, or the WWE Championship, rather, he just looked around awkwardly with his eyes all around the room, darting around. That's what some people do when they're on drugs. Like, that you know, that's like a hallucinogen or something that he was on. I mean, it was weird. I don't know what we're supposed to make of it. Almost as weird as Becky Lynch's like all of her strange, awkward, way too long sound effects that were supposed to be funny, I guess, because it went too long. That's why it was funny. I don't know. But it's kind of the same thing with Shelton. They have this awkward humor that just translated and spilled from Becky Lynch to Shelton Benjamin. They must have had the same drink that day, or shared a glass of, Gatorade or something. I don't know. But something was in the water this week in WWE with just a couple of those segments. So I don't know what the heck that was all about with Shelton. I don't know what program this could possibly lead to. I don't really know if I care about Shelton Benjamin's opinion on who will win the WWE Championship. To be honest, I don't know if I do. He's unfortunately been a bit of a disappointment since his return to WWE. He's been a step behind what he used to be, but certainly admirable and still a super athlete in the ring. But yeah, I don't really know what to make of that. He just kind of had his eyes dart around the room. So very, very, very strange. Now, a couple other quick tidbits is Ali, who's this just super good guy that he's trying to be about. When you hear my name being called champion, you'll know that's just like your name. And when you see my face on a poster, it'll be just like your face. Well, first of all, Mustafa Ali, or excuse me, just not Mustafa. It's just Ali now, excuse me, is not exactly a common name. So to say that when you see his name, I can relate and be like, ooh, that could be me someday. Gosh, by golly, I hope I can get to WWE and live my dream and just be so happy to be there. And I can relate and be so just happy and vicariously live through you that I can be that one day. And I'm now inspired by Ali. Yippee, I have something to live for. Enough. Ali, please. Enough with the corporate mumbo jumbo. I'm begging you. I don't need another corporate kiss ass, which is what that is. That's called the brand putting themselves above the talent right here. Ali is ultra talented. Ultra talented. Had he not gotten that injury before the Elimination Chamber, he could have very well been in the position Kofi Kingston is in. Because if you remember, Kofi Kingston took his spot because he was injured. So, I don't know this. I will give him credit on this. This is one thing I do like. The style of his promo. The setting of his promo. The feel of his promo. Excellent, excellent, excellent. The content of his promo? Womp, womp, womp. That's what I would say. I don't have a better sound effect, so I had to use my own voice. That's what I would give the content of his promos. Just a big fat... How's that for another sound effect? I could get legit sound effects. They don't sound so bad. That's what I really would, though. I mean, it's just so contrived and, oh, look, he's such a genuinely good guy. Oh, he just wants to help people. Oh, look, all he has to do is stare at an alcoholic and they instantly get cured. Apparently, he's Jesus. Apparently, Mustafa or Ali is Jesus Christ himself. He can just look at people and they just drop the bottle and go, oh, that look in his eye. I'm done drinking. Please tell me you guys saw that a couple of weeks ago. So, I like Ali's style. I like that he looks like the common man. Really? So, you're telling us to relate to you because you look like the common man and you apparently have a name that's common, which is not. I don't know. I'm already against him and I haven't even seen his presentation in the ring yet. But I love him as a performer, as a wrestler, excuse me. I just don't know if I'm on board with this good all-American, everybody gets an equal opportunity and look at me, you can be me one day, and this wholesome, great guy. It's kind of stomach-churning if you ask me. But, all right, moving on. Let's see here. I'm just looking through the news wire. Apparently, Maria Kanellis is actually pregnant. That's a bit of a shock, to be honest with you. Apparently, she is carrying her second child. Okay, fine. I don't know where this goes, though, because if she is actually pregnant, and they just did a story last week with her not dumping him, but being ashamed that he is the father of her child, well, I don't know where they're going with it. Because she can't compete. She can't get any kind of physical altercations. She's pregnant. She cannot do anything. So, I don't know. But I like Maria Kanellis. I think she's sorely underused. All right. The other item coming out of the news here is that Paul Heyman's first night saw a huge increase in ratings. It was up 10% this week. That's huge. 10%. The first hour of Raw, was watched by 2.47 million viewers, which was only up 3.4 from the last week, but still among some of the best starts in 2 months. The second hour jumped way up to 2.68, which was a 15.6% increase from last week and one of the best hours of Raw since WrestleMania season. So, and that was with Paul Heyman at the helm for the very first time. So hour three did fall off some, but as can be expected because, my God, it's 3 hours. So I don't know here if, and I really believe, but the key here could be Paul Heyman just simply being announced as the executive director of the show, and people are going, oh, I want to tune in to see what Paul E does in the first night at the, you know, the top of the food chain for Raw. So, but that's encouraging. It'll be interesting to see, though, if next week it follows suit with at least maintaining that increase or maybe even going up further. I mean, that would ultimately be what WWE would want, is just this slow increase in viewership. So, all right. Well, guys, I think that'll do it for me today. Thank you so much for listening. Again, follow me on Twitter at the WWE Podcast and go to the website, WWEPodcast.com, and give me a 5-star rating and review if you think I deserve it. If you don't, then you know, let me know. Let me know how I can improve the show. I mean, this all show ultimately is for you guys, and I do love doing this for you. So, all right. Well, that's all I got for you guys for now. Again, I will be back most likely Friday with the weekly wrap-up with my co-host, Mary Grader, and that will round out the week. I'm sure we'll have an awesome conversation as always, and then I'll be back Sunday with your wrestling nostalgia moment of the new week. So, guys, as always, take care. I'll talk to you next time.